This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The LCS finals are this weekend, Cloud9 versus Team Liquid in the summer finals. Who will win and what lane will impact this championship? Invin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci is going to give me a preview of this upcoming final and speak about other esport news. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
All right, so for this LCS finals, do you know what the format is going to be?
Yeah, so on Saturday we're going to have our third place match between the two teams that were eliminated in semifinals, Counter Logic Gaming and Clutch Gaming. And then Sunday we'll have the actual finals itself, you know, Cloud9 versus Team Liquid. Both series will be at best of five, as is standard playoffs format.
Man, I am so excited for Cloud9 versus Team Liquid because I want to know, is there any bad blood between Cloud9 and Jensen?
I've asked Jensen about this, and, you know, there really isn't. I mean, obviously, no player, especially a player of his caliber, is, like, you know, happy to be benched, right? But I think that that had a lot less to do with his decision to move to Team Liquid than the fact that he, despite all his international success on Cloud9, was unable to win a domestic title that had eluded him until he moved to Team Liquid this year. And very first split with them, he won one, right? So, no, I mean, he's still friendly with the players. I mean, obviously they like clowning on each other. Like, Jensen loves beating Cloud9. Cloud9 loves beating Team Liquid. You know, it's a friendly rivalry, and it kind of always has been. And Jensen, as well as in other esports, Stewie2K going from Cloud9 to Team Liquid and Counter-Strike, there's a real nice rivalry building between these teams. I don't think there's any actual bad blood in this instance.
Oh, okay, that's good to hear. I mean, they're both great teams, and I'm a big fan of Cloud9, but Jensen, man, he's a beast in mid lane so far.
Yeah, he's been really, really, really strong this year, too.
So, in the past, Cloud9, they use substitutions. Are they going to be doing that this split?
As far as this series goes, Cloud9 is coming into this series with a seven-man roster. You know, Team Liquid just has their standard five. I don't even think they have an official sub right now. So Cloud9 has Deathly, who was recently acquired in a trade with Golden Guardians, and is kind of like he's currently the Cloud9 Academy AD carry, but he's had a lot of LCS time with Golden Guardians. He also used to be in the Cloud9 organization in the very early stages of his career back in 2016. So, you know, years back. So he's on the roster. I'm not sure exactly the particular reason, but also Blabber, the backup jungler to Sven Skarren, who just won the MVP today, is there. And they really should be treated fully as subs. Cloud9 before has kind of utilized their substitutes in unique ways of platooning players or giving their team different looks in the middle of a series. And while I wouldn't say that's out of the question, I would say it's less likely than in the past because of how good Sven Skarren has been. And also because the main thing that Deathly and Sneaky do differently is they communicate differently. So while I think there's a chance we could see some substitutions, I don't think it will be as likely. And I would say that, if anything, we might see Blabber for one game in place of Sven Skarren if the series gets tough. But I can't imagine anything outside of that, just given how strong he's been and how experienced Sneaky is. I think it'd be foolish to sub Deathly in this type of situation this early into his career.
Okay, so since Jensen was on Cloud9 for so long, I mean, he understands their team dynamics fairly well. Do you think that Cloud9 is going to be at a disadvantage because Jensen knows them? Or do you think that Team Liquid is going to be at a disadvantage because Cloud9 knows Jensen so well?
That's like a really interesting question, right? First of all, not only are these teams familiar, but a lot of these players are familiar. Remember, before it was, you know, TLC9, it was Doublelift on TSM, who had Jensen's number on Cloud9. And then so many iterations of these players and you know, like, all these different things happening, you know, Smithy on CLG. Like these guys have been around for so long, they've faced each other so many different times, and have been on teams together, that I think that there's, like, familiarity across the board, regardless of who's on what team, right? If we're talking specifics, however, I would say that Cloud9 has looked very sharp playing through their mid lane more than ever before this split. Even, I think, when Jensen was on the roster, Sven Skarren's done a great job of kind of, like, playing key and then utilizing that mid lane pressure to really get top lane and the whole map going. So I think if Jensen doesn't respect Cloud9's pressure, which he has a tendency of doing when he thinks he's better than the team sometimes, that he can get caught off guard. But, I mean, he also, you know, he played with Sven Skarren for a long time. He knows this team. I don't think there's any specific, like, familiarity that hasn't already been covered, because these teams have played against each other before. Some of these players have played against each other for years. They know each other's tendencies. And I think the real thing is because of how familiar the teams are. The team that really catches the other one off guard, that really kind of has a curveball, you know, whether it be a draft phase or something, that's going to be the team that I think might actually take this whole thing just because of how familiar these players are against each other.
Wow. Okay, so in the past matches with Team Liquid, it's really come down to mid lane, I think. So if Cloud9 has a really strong mid lane, Team Liquid has a very strong mid lane. What lane is going to break this game for either side? Do you think it's going to be mid lane? I think.
It's so hard to say, right? I think that that's a very, very good assumption. I think I would bet on that as well, simply because if you look around the map, Licorice is a great top laner and a point of strength for Cloud9, but Impact is the best top laner in North America. He's not going to be run over that easily by Licorice compared to maybe somebody else. So it's going to be hard to play through that. Sneaky and Zazel are a good bot lane. Devilish and CoreJJ are the best bot lane. I don't think that Sneaky and Zazel will get smashed, but again, I unless there's a certain mismatch or a weird counter pick or something, I don't expect, you know, the bot lane to get run over. And while Jensen's very good in his own right, what Cloud9 did expose in the regular split against Team Liquid was that they didn't have the best synergy as far as, you know, Jensen and Xmithy in terms of mid-jungle, you know, percentage. Like, Xmithy is, you know, and since Garen are about the same level right now, maybe since Garen's a little stronger, but, you know, Jensen's superior to Nisqy for sure, but the team overall was not as good as at playing sort of defensively around Jensen and protecting his kind of aggressive laning style. And so if they're not prepared for that, Vince Garen is going to be able to take advantage of that for Cloud9. So yes, I think that while Jensen's a great mid laner, I think he's a better mid laner individually than Nisqy even. There's a lot more to it than that. And if Team Liquid haven't adjusted since the last time they played Cloud9, there's going to be some problems.
See, I'm trying to figure out who to root for, and it's incredibly hard because I love both teams. And when it comes down to it, I think it's going to be something incredibly stupid on somebody's part, and that's why they're going to lose the match, because it's going to be a standstill, I think, for at least a good 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we might see things be a little bit more fast and loose in this final, which would actually be nice. Usually teams play a little bit more conservatively in the final because of the stakes. But both these teams, you know, with their semifinals victories, they both qualified for the World Championship. So whoever wins the finals in this summer will be the first seed for North America. And the person who loses the final, the team who loses the finals, will still have the most circuit points remaining, so they'll be the second seed. So I guess what I'm hoping for is, obviously, I want teams to try their best, but I'm hoping that teams are not afraid to, especially teams who know each other this well, they're not afraid to, like, try new things with, like, the stakes slightly lower, just in the fact that, like, yeah, you might lose the final, but it's like, you're still going to Worlds, your entire season's not, you know, your season isn't ending here today, you know what I mean? So I hope, because both, I think, unpredictability would be a huge strength in the series, but also because I want North American teams to be, you know, a little bit more willing to experiment on the way out to Worlds. That's something that Team Liquid has done very well. They were criticized in the spring for not really playing around their top side and just putting him back on tanks. And he's been playing carry champion since March now, you know. Cloud9 is showing the ability to play out through top lane, but also through mid lane, you know. Like, so I think this is a good thing. I hope that we see this trend continue regardless of the result.
All right, Nick, I got to know. Put your money where your mouth is. Which team is going to win? If you're going to put money down, who should I put money on?
Oh, Team Liquid. Team Liquid, for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too. I think Team Liquid's going to get this going.
I think that Cloud9 has a more interesting draft, potentially even a better approach, but I think it'll be close. I'm thinking 3-2, probably, but I think Team Liquid will pull it out in the end. I think that even if Cloud9 has slightly more variety of their style, Team Liquid is more polished and all around, I think, a little bit more put together. I think they'll have adjusted enough from the regular season games against Cloud9. Like, they won't come in foolishly, and I think it'll be a good series, but I think that Team Liquid will take it.
All right, so here's another team I was kind of a fan of, and then they just kind of dipped. Echo Fox. What happened with them? They were supposed to be sold, but I haven't heard anything else about it.
Okay, so basically, here's what happened. So Echo Fox was going to, you know, have to be, you know, forcibly be sold for failing to comply with requests made by the LCS. And so basically, what Echo Fox did is they came to the LCS with a proposal of, like, hey, we want to sell to this buyer, right? Which, you know, and this is a report by ESPN's Jacob Wolf, but it ended up being true that the buyer was Cranky Sports and Entertainment. Now, for those who don't know, Cranky Sports and Entertainment owns the Denver Nuggets NBA team. They also own the Los Angeles Gladiators Overwatch League franchise. But League of Legends fans might remember them from Cranky Esports. All their assets, the Los Angeles Gladiators and stuff, is managed by Sentinel Esports, which used to be called Phoenix One, which got their start in the LCS, you know, 3 years ago. That proposal seemed like a great idea because here's a team that's, you know, been in the LCS before. They're familiar, you know, whatever. What ended up happening, for whatever reason, is the CEO of Sentinels actually ended up filing a lawsuit against his partner, Cranky, because he said that them trying to get into the LCS with that spot violated an agreement between the Cranky Sports Group and the actual esports organization Sentinels. So because of that, they had to reach a settlement. The sale falls through. So Equifax does still have to sell, but there's no buyer. So starting August 16th, so about a week ago now, Riot entered a 30-day period of, like, accepting applications to buy Equifax's spot, and they'll probably be announcing it before the World Championship on who they're going to select, basically.
So do you think they'll be sold before the next split, or if not...
Absolutely.
Oh, okay, good.
We've seen the end of Equifax in the LCS, that's for sure.
I have to know, what did you think of the reworked Pantheon?
Reworked Pantheon is actually, I think, a good... He's a good design. Like, he, first of all, the visual update stunning. The ultimate is better for sure. It's like a more, not only is it like better for him, but it's also like less random. I mean, like his ultimate was just like a little too like random for like the current state of the game. I think it's a lot easier to get out of now. Or like Pantheon was just very binary before, and I think this has given him a chance to be a little less binary. That being said, I do think there are certain core values to his kit that need to be changed to compensate for the fact that he's more well-balanced champion now. Whereas before, it was like, he's binary because he's really good at these things and really bad at these things. And so I think there's still going to be some fine-tuning and balancing to his kit. I think there's still, like, I think there are certain things where he's still, like, a little too oppressive, like his new shield ability. That's really obnoxious. Maybe there's a cooldown raise on that, something like that. I don't know. I've only played against it, you know, here and there. Not a whole lot yet, but I would say he's, like, not incredibly OP or anything, but he's definitely strong. And, well, I think overall it's a healthy move for the champion. There still needs to be some fine-tuning, which is to be expected after only, like, you know, a patch or so.
I enjoyed his rework. In the past, he had a kill combo. So you knew if all of his stuff was up, no cooldowns, boom, he would just come in and nuke you. But in this case, yep, the way they made him is now you as a player have to be aware of your auto attacks, of your cooldowns, especially his passive. And I think, especially with Yumi and Qiyana, the way Riot is pushing their newest champions and the reworks, they want you to think. So no more kill combos. Yeah. They want you to be aware of where you are on the map. They want you to be aware of why you're picking this champion. And I think that's going to make interesting play because that's, you should be playing smarter.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the new rework, you know, like I said, like obviously balancing will need to take effect, like any of these things, but bottom line, like, you know, there's no argument that the current new Pantheon's kit is, you know, objectively full of much healthier interactions with the rest of the champions of the game and the game itself than the previous kit. So definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, but I don't enjoy his new ultimate. I did like to just, like, the way in the past he would just fall down on you, and I thought that was pretty cool. And in this case, he kind of throws his spear, and then he rolls into it. I don't know. It reminded me too much of Orin, and I was like, I didn't really get too much of a feel, you know?
Yeah, there's some people I know who are like, oh man, I miss that, like, you know, like, people just call it the man drops. He just drop out of the sky on you, basically. And, you know, it's definitely, like, kind of like a fond memory thing, and I think, like, overall, this ultimate, like, it might be a little bit, like, too flashy, you know, but it really, I think, is a healthier move for him to have in the game. So I think it gives him some team fight presence without him having to be, like, 9-0 to do anything in a team fight, right?
Yeah. So that's so true. Okay, so here's one I was reading about. I don't know if this is true, but I read that somebody on a balance team wanted to buff Yasuo in 9.17. And why would they even consider that? I think he's pretty strong already.
I think they're like Yasuo is in like a pretty good spot right now. I think that there's something to be said for specifically right now. There are other champions that are similar to Yasuo that do his job better. That doesn't mean that he's a bad champion, but I would say, like, we haven't seen as much of him in pro play for that specific reason, you know, in favor of, you know, the Qiyana, Akali, Aurelia, you know, pick your Bruiser Assassin, right? So, I mean, if you wanted to see him more in pro play or think that he could add him into pro play, it could be, you know, it could be related to that. I don't think he's, like, in an incredibly out-of-control spot, but he's not, like, a champion that's come to mind that I'm like, oh, that needs a buff, you know?
Yeah, because Yasuo, I think he needs an entire rework. Because his stats, his kit is fine. It's just that there are better champions to pick out there. I mean, are you going to pick Kennen or are you going to pick Yasuo? I'm going with Kennen, you know? Am I going with Aatrox at top and then take Yasuo to counter? No, I'm not going to do that. I'll take Jace, you know? So it's just, I think he's a bad champion and he needs to be reworked entirely.
I think that he's still in a better spot there. These are other champions that are in much, like, worse
spots
because I think he still does have, like, enough
variety in his kid. He's a lot of mobility and a lot of self-sufficiency, whereas, like, I think some more of the, like, kind of more binary assassins, like Fizz and even Zed, who's gotten a little better with recent buffs, but, you know, those kind of more, like, binary assassins who don't really have that kind of bruiser aspect to them are really suffering a lot more. I do agree with you. I think that, well, I think the idea is that, like, you know, Yasuo, like, is very, like, you know, it's the highest, like, people like to call it a noob champion, but Yasuo actually has a really nice skill expression. That's why people want to play him. When you're really good at him, it's really freaking cool. And you can, like, 1v5 a team. Like, it's pretty insane. But, like you said, there are other champions who do his job better. There are champions that are easier to play with more margin for error. You know, there's people who just do his job better. So it might be that. I'm not sure he needs an entire rework, per se, but I do agree that, like, pretty much a lot of those, like, champions that came out, like, between 2012 and, like, 2014, who were, like, aggressive champions, kind of all fell in certain ways to the wayside, with, like, the really rework and the Akali rework kind of showing, like, how they want, you know, highly mobile assassin champions to play from now on. But, you know, like, it means that, you know, similar to Pantheon in the Bruiser class, that some of these older assassin kits are a little more outdated now.
Yeah, because the thing with Yasuo is he doesn't feel like a bruiser. He doesn't feel like an assassin too much. I think that's why it needs some type of rework, because it's lacking compared to the other champions. I mean, I'm not going to pick up Yasuo when Akali's better. That's it. But I guess that's the same for any lane.
I think there's a thing to be said for, like, also, like, yes, Akali's a better champion, but, like, is the guy on your team a really good Yasuo, and do you have a lot of setup with, like, knocks on your team, like, yes, a Gragas and a Bronze, then maybe it is better to pick the Yasuo over the Akali, you know? So I think that, like, you know, there could be some changes, like, to his kit overall, but, like, as far as his level of strength, I think it's actually okay right now. I really do. I think that while he might be problematic with his kit overall, like, his relative, like, level of strength, like, I don't think he's that problematic to the rest of the game, even if his kit isn't perfect right now, just because he does have those specific advantages of his ultimate being propped up of knockups. And so it's like, if you want to build, you know, you pick Yasuo if you want to make sure you have, like, a composition around Yasuo, right? And so I think that it's okay in that sense.
Yeah, I give you that. You have a Malphite on your team, Yasuo will be all right.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, so for this patch, 9.17, are there any nerfs, buffs, or changes that we should be aware of?
The new patch probably is going to arrive next Wednesday. We're not sure exactly when it's going to arrive, but that's probably when it's going to arrive. So Aatrox just got a slight base HP nerf. I think that's fine. Brilliant Soul got some changes. We haven't seen that in quite some time. He's kind of fallen out of favor. He's kind of, like, in that kind of in-between place where, like, he's not really doing enough damage to justify his choice compared to other champions. Just doesn't have as dynamic of a kit. But his Q is an interesting move where, you know, if he uses his Q now while he's faster than the Q actually matches his speed, which is great. He, you know, speed boosting his kit with the E and everything. His W now causes the stars to expand in addition to rotate. So, like, there's, like, some, like, pretty, like, good, like, there's, like, a, like, I wouldn't say it's a rework, but there's, like, a lot of, like, miniature changes here that might make him a little bit, like, you know, without changing the entirety of identity, he might be a little bit more updated for the current state of the game. Galio got buffed after kind of, you know, falling into oblivion. He was nerfed and changed as a really good mid laner, became a good support, and then just hasn't really done much of anything. But his mana provide has been increased, his cooldown on his Q has been decreased, his minimum damage on his W has been increased as well. So this tells me they want to move him more in, like, a potentially solo lane direction, but it's hard to say right now. It's hard to say whether these changes will do too much. Garen also got changed. His attack speed just went up by 0.1%. His passives got changed. Non-epic monsters now never break it. Passive won't double below 25% health anymore, though. So, like, again, like, little tiny changes to Garen. Like, there's six changes alone to Judgment. So, like, there are a lot of really, like, fine-tuned things on Garen, and I think this is mostly regarding his recent success in competitive play with Yuumi in the bot lane. Yuumi just kind of enables Garen to survive the weak laning phase and gives him extra speed and shields and stuff to do more insane Garen things throughout the game. Fnatic actually played it after so, and it's become popular here and there. So I think that this is like, oh man, this is clearly highlighted there's issues with Garen's kit, because if you give him the Yuumi boost, he's suddenly unstoppable. So I think that this is a good response to that. Lista got buffed, just her base AD, her base mana, and her mana per level. She needed some stats buffs. I think that's okay. Kayle got more armor, but her attack speed will not scale as much, which I think is good. I think in the late game, she's a little too insane. I think that's a good change. And the fact that she was so insane in the late game on her own is kind of what's made her hard to balance. even after the rework. In addition, her passive got three changes. Her Q, Radiant Blast, it refunds 50 mana cost, now it's a champion. Like there's a lot of changes in here that, like, there are 8 changes alone to her Q. So these are a lot of changes, and they're trying to basically make her, like, a little bit more balanced in the sense of, like, hey, the way you play against Kayle is, like, she doesn't do anything until level 11. Then at level 11, she's, like, completely insane. And I think they're trying to, like, you know, smooth out that power curve. Leona got a buff, which is good. I actually think Leona is slightly coming back into, like, being a pretty strong champion because of recent nerfs to other supports. And I think better playmaking style and tankiness really does lend itself to the current style of play. Lucian got a base AD buff, so we should see some more of him soon. He's already a pretty strong lane pick and pretty popular in solo queue. Nika with a quality of life change, she's able to, you know, disguise herself with a passive. Now she's able to cancel it before you, it's kind of wore off on its own. The new Pantheon got a few changes. The attack queue now crits targets below 25% health, and damage reduction against monsters is decreased to 0% from 15%, and I think that's good. He was just, like, that's kind of the thing that was making it. In the jungle, his clear was just too easy. I think that's important, like, it's, you know, He can't be power clearing that much if he has so much else to offer. So I think it's a good thing as far as Pantheon jungle balance goes. And his ult, you should give him reduced damage from monsters. That's not only the case either. So these are Pantheon jungle nerfs, and that's where I've seen him really do the most damage as a jungler. So this might be what really kind of smooths him out. Hopefully it does. Tiana got some decrease on her E. Her ultimate cooldown is now going to be 120 at all ranks instead of just the first rank, which is good. Ryze and Zyra both got buffs. Ryze to his base MR and the damage on his E, and Zyra to her ultimate now only costs 100 mana at all ranks instead of increasing, and the cooldown is also much lower too, 20 seconds lower at all ranks. So that's really, really good too. And I think that we've already seen a little bit of Zyra in the LCS, and I think we might see some more of her pretty soon in terms of being kind of one of those strong damage supports coming out, might shake up the meta a little bit. So that'll be interesting. All the gameplay changes basically.
All right, cool. Thanks for that. All right, so I have to know, did you read or hear anything about the Phantom Lord lawsuit?
Yeah, I did.
So could you break it down for us? Because I'm a little confused as to why he's suing Twitch.
So Phantom Lord was banned from using Twitch's services back in 2016. He's a pretty popular streamer. At the time, he held, like, the single viewer record, but he was very popular on Twitch, basically, right? And he was banned. And I think that's why he's suing them, is that basically, like, you know, he's, like, unlawfully banned, and you know, my business, like, my career was, like, you know, it was unjustifiably stopped, basically. And I think it's, like, he's suing for kind of, like, damages or defamation in that case, you know, of, like, over-severity on punishment regarding something, or he's basically contesting his ban. That's kind of where he's coming from in this case.
Yeah, but where did he get $35 million from? I mean, I can pull a big sum of money out of my butt, too, you know, but is this justified?
It's hard to say, right? Because on one hand, you know, if he was at his current, if he was still at peak status relative to, like, and let's say that, you know, the tide raises all ships and he goes to Twitch to what it is now, then that might have been what he made in the last 2 years if he was still on Twitch. Like, I completely agree. I believe that. But, like, that's, you know, that's him basically saying if nothing had happened, my Twitch channel would have not only thrive, but grown with the rest of Twitch and, you know, the Twitch community as a whole, right? You know, there's, like, he's assuming a lot, right? Like, he knows what happened in 2.5 years. But, yeah, I think that's where he's kind of getting that from. Like, he's probably, like, assuming, like, he's like, you know, okay, what did I miss out on making, you know?
See, and from what I was reading, and this is where I get confused at, he said that Twitch never really told him why he was banned, because their terms of services was too vague, or they didn't even know what their terms of services were. And then Twitch said, no, we banned you because you were gambling. So, and that's against our TOS. So I'm like, that's pretty clear and concise. How did he even get this into court? I'm not even sure.
I mean, there's always a way, first of all, right? If someone wants to take something to court, they will. But I think that there's something to be said for, like, the lack of consistency on Twitch's end regarding a lot of these campaigns that gives him some leverage. I mean, like, Twitch, like, TOS violations, like, are, yes, that's a violation of the terms of service, and, you know, that's that. But Twitch as a whole has not been consistent in handling these cases, and I think that Phantom Lord kind of seeing that Twitch more recently than before has come under criticism for not necessarily handling all these cases well, crucially not handling them all consistently in the same way. And I think he saw kind of an opportunity there to potentially gain some leverage on what he felt was unjust treatment. Okay.
Do you think that this lawsuit will change the landscape of streaming on Twitch?
I think that, if nothing else, it will cause Twitch to at least be a little bit more, like, you know, to tighten things up a little bit as far as
making sure that they're enforcing their policies consistently in full, or you know, whatever they're doing, making sure that it's consistent. I think it's a good thing. Do I think that Phantom Lord will get $35 million from this? I would be very surprised.
Me too. I think maybe the undisclosed sum, probably $2 and a bag of cookies, and say, be on your way.
Yeah, they might reach a settlement. That wouldn't be out of the question either. It only ends to better things for him, I think, whether it be a settlement or even just more press or whatever. I mean, I don't know exactly what he's trying to do, but I mean, we're going to have to see how it shakes down.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at Nick Geraci, which is my name. And also go to inventglobal.com to see the work of me and the rest of my colleagues. We cover all different kinds of gaming and esports stuff, from, you know, standard industry stuff to League of Legends, Overwatch, Fortnite, you name it.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.